The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of KWVA Radio or the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage providing analysis and opinions of John Zerzan and the community.
Variations every service with a smile. They're gonna take a little break and they'll be back after a while. Well, I hear the South America's coming in a style. Suspect even your mother won't detect it, so your father won't know. They think that I got no respect, but everything means less than zero. Hey, 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 hey. A pistol was still smoking, a man lay on the floor. Mr. Oswald said it had an understanding with the law. He said he heard about a couple living in the USA. He said they traded in their baby for a Chevrolet. Let's talk about the future now. We put the past away. Turn up the TV, no one listening will suspect. Even your mother won't detect it, so your father won't know. They think that I got no respect, but everything means less than zero. Hit, 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 hit.
Hello there, it's, wow, boy, I'm loud in my headphones here. It's Anarchy Radio for June 18th. No, there's nothing on the headphones. It doesn't matter. It's only my, thanks. Yeah, I think that's partly there. Okay, yes indeed. Many things to talk about. It was great having Rob Los Ricos here last week, and I think we're going to have Rob Miller after a while. He was here back in the springtime, and I got a phone message from him. He is up near Salem. This week there's a primitive skills encampment going on up at Mission Bottom. I think it's officially called Mission State Park, just north of Salem on the Willamette. There's used to be a ferry there. I don't know if there still is. Anyway, it's called Echoes in Time. And it seems like there are more and more earth skills, wilderness skills, primitive skills, whatever you call it, going on. So maybe we'll get to talk to him before too long here. Let's see. KWVARadio.org on the internet. Archive.archive.org. You can call at 346-0645 or 541-346-0645 if you want to. Oh, let's see. Well, another heads up about Feral Visions, which is going to take place out east of Tucson a ways, up in the Sky Mountain area. It sounds like a beautiful place up off the desert. So some of these naysayers from the East Coast who are talking about 150 degree heat and rattlesnakes and scorpions and everything else can kind of forget about it. They're just sore heads or something. There's a ride board thing at Green Anarchy. If you want to go to the Green Anarchy website, they are handling the ride situation, and I think it's time to start getting serious about that. There are people offering rides and needing rides, the usual thing. There was speaking of Rob Los Ricos, I see there's a there's an interview, Portland Indie Media. Not a very lengthy one, but he had some good points worth talking about here, just briefly anyway, before I go on to other things. He says, the question is, what advice would you give to people just taking up radical politics? His answer is, stop it. It's too late to legally create any positive changes in this society. Instead of wasting your time accomplishing nothing other than compiling an FBI police dossier, start learning how to provide for yourself and learn basic survival skills. This civilization is coming apart, and anyone who wants to try to maintain the consumer lifestyle is doomed. People who want to raise a family and see the species continue need to concentrate their energies on learning how to cope with the coming ecological and political catastrophes this civilization has caused. Mind you, this will not be legal, but it's time to live in radically different ways. Otherwise, our species will likely become extinct before the end of the century. And another question, how do you think we can build a revolutionary movement in America? Kind of a softball here. I don't believe in movement building. The survival of life as we know it is at stake, and most people are ill-prepared for the challenges ahead. The only advice I can give along these lines is to join together with a few trusted friends and decide how and where you're going to make your stand, apart from consumerism, then get out and start doing it. In time, there will be many other bands of people dropping out. There won't be any alternatives, at least not pleasant ones. Besides, there can only be so many guards at the concentration camps. Yeah. And he said, he kind of touched on this last week on the broadcast. I think that I'm in favor. I've wasted time in the old movement building thing in the 60s, but at the same time, I don't think we should toss out all the sense of possibilities either. I mean, this could be the completely wise way to look at this, and no one knows how it's going to come down. But I think it's not that unlikely to imagine, at least as another possibility, a kind of collision or explosion when people began to realize what a dead end this whole thing is and what a no future prospect it has, that it's offering less, not more, and then there are perhaps at least more possibilities than just heading for the woods. Maybe both? I don't know. Anyway, there have been some very interesting things. Just recently I mentioned the two-pager in Utney Reader. I think it's the August issue, the current issue, which is just a bibliographic thing, really, from their resident librarian, Chris Dodge, very cool guy. About U.S. anti-civilization publications, primarily different zines and books and so on. And the other one, you might have seen it if you take a look at InfoShop, that's been posted. Pittsburgh City Paper, if you haven't seen that, there's an amazing story on Kevin Tucker, came out, I think it's just like Eugene Weekly, only it's for Pittsburgh. I think it's 5 or 6 pages, and it's wonderful. I mean, this guy, Bill O'Driscoll, turned out to be very sympathetic and a very decent writer on the subject. Check that out. It's very well done, and it talks, it's a conversation out, actually in a park in Pittsburgh with Kevin and his partner Yank, and just discussing it as they go along, and they're pointing out the edible plants and so forth, and of course it's interlaced with anti-civilization politics and theory, and quite an amazing thing, and I've heard there's been some very nice feedback. That isn't surprising, nor is it surprising that there's been a very somewhat bitter counter-flurry from the left-wing folks, the traditionalists still stuck in the 19th century, who really get threatened with the idea of pitching this whole nightmare, this whole omnicidal, life-destroying machine, becoming more and more obvious to people what it's all about. In fact, there's another post, even more recently, in fact today, from Mickey Z. It's a piece called Blackouts and Urban Cavemen. And I've seen that name around. I'm pretty darn certain that Mickey Z is some type of progressive, writes things, I think, for Z Magazine and Where else? You know, that sort of thing. Didn't strike me as especially rigid on the subject, but, you know, kind of a liberal left character, not anti-Civ. Nor am I saying he's anti-Civ, but this is a little meditation. He's thinking back. He lives in New York, and he was thinking about the events 2 years ago, that August, middle of August 2003. And he's talking about what he discovered there. People sitting around flickering candles, eating food, and sharing their stories and their stuff. And I'm just going to read a little bit of this. When the blackout of 03 dimmed the mighty skyline, I could suddenly see stars by looking up, zillions of them blinking at me from beyond the unlit skyscrapers. Traffic lights were out of commission, but to the southeast, Mars provided the only red light we really needed. By coincidence, our crimson neighbor was closer than ever before, and the power outage gave us Easterners an excellent view of Mars' southern hemisphere. Still, even with the stars twinkling above, it was when I returned my gaze back down to the streets that I truly couldn't believe my eyes. That clammy evening, one could witness a sight even more uncommon than any celestial spectacle. Across the darkened city, Big Apple denizens stopped hustling. They sat still and talked to each other. No computers, nor television, practically no telephones, just face-to-face communication, even if it was too dark at times to actually see faces. This unforeseen solidarity was accomplished without the assistance of email, Palm Pilot, or fax machine. Money didn't change hands, no cell phone radiation was emitted, no air was conditioned. Under a sky full of stars and a visiting red spacemate, he's dreaming about a Martian visitor, it was possible to encounter the sort of life we may have evolved to live back in the, quote, caveman days. Our modern caves, the subterranean tunnels of transportation known as the subway, were empty, but the concrete jungle above them might as well have been the savanna. The tribes of Manhattan sat around fires, sharing food and communal stories, some even beat on drums. In times like this, it's easier to appreciate that we each possess a physiology that evolved to negotiate the Stone Age. Here lies the rub. We live in the Space Age. We are urban cavemen and women, overmatched in our daily crusade to navigate an artificial reality because we have lost contact with our instincts. For one thing, we likely didn't evolve to be surrounded by this many people. Thus, in our futile search for a manageable tribe, so forth. And then he kind of winds it up. He's talking about how in the busy streets, as somebody else said, you develop all kinds of skills, you know, dodging traffic and dealing with crowds and so forth, and all the disconnected, kind of alienated modes that we have. And he ponders, what about when it's not busy? As in a blackout, things return to, when the power comes on, things return to, quote, normal. But what is that? Maybe no power is a glimpse of what really is normal or healthful. Let's see. Can you turn that down just a little bit? Thanks. Here's something. This is a little sad, a little dreary, but I didn't want to leave this out either. Turns out that Tony Nocella, who teaches at Syracuse University, I think he's a grad student, postdoc, maybe, I'm not sure, but he is the editor, he's been the editor of a couple of compilations. The latest one is called Igniting a Revolution, and it's a very big collection, a lot of good stuff in this book, different approaches to challenging the system. Well, it turns out that not so long ago here, I think in this past school year, he gave I think it was like a weekend seminar or kind of a mini course on conflict resolution, which isn't surprising because that's his specialty that he gives. He does that at Syracuse and other colleges and institutions here and there. Thing is, though, he was paid to do this, and he did it for the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia. And when this came out, which is wasn't, I'm not saying this was trying, he tried to keep this a secret. I don't think he did. I'm not sure about that. He said he didn't anyway, but Kevin Tucker is the one that publicized this, just asking, what the hell? You know, what are you doing? What are you playing at? And that's just kind of amazing. It's just, I think maybe at best you'd say this person isn't very serious. He just finds no problem talking to them. He said he wasn't talking about ALF or ELF stuff, and he probably wasn't. I have no reason to think that he's lying about that. But, gee, that's just kind of, man, I don't get that. And neither, I think, do a lot of people. I don't know what's up with that. He responded to Kevin by saying, well, what's the big deal? It's what I do everywhere. And, you know, I didn't give him any information and so forth. Well, they do get information, and just that kind of, it's more than just peaceful coexistence. I mean, you're there and everything's fine, and you're just giving this course for the enemy, and that's just kind of surprising, to say the least. And there'll be more on this. I think this just opened up. I mean, this is just came out like in the past week, and now it's fully public, and I think it should be fully public. As Kevin said, there is never a justification for public figures or any figures within the animal earth liberation milieu to speak to the feds or any government agency. This is not only an act of stupidity, but extremely threatening, as the current green scare shows. They are baiting information, and anything helps. This is what they do and what they must do to maintain order and further subject the number one, quote, domestic terrorist group, ALF, ELF, and the milieu, etc. I mean, it's... I don't know that that even needs pointing out, but that's just kind of sad that you'd find out that that's going on. Well, some other news, maybe a little bit related, kind of in the same vein, in a sense. On July 7th, six members of Il Silvestre Collective, who put out the green anarchist magazine Terra Selvaggia, were convicted of activities associated with the Marxist group COR, which in Italian stands for Revolutionary Offensive Cells. Five of their co-defendants were found not guilty. They were arrested 2 years ago after a communique from this Revolutionary Offensive Cells they published it, and supposedly during a police raid, the cops found a copy of the communique, and people who attended the trial called it a complete farce, that the only evidence the government had was the original copy, and I'm not sure what an original copy is, but anyway, of this group communique, which was sent to them through the mail and sent to all kinds of other groups. So what does that establish? Nothing, of course. So, but anyway, they are, I don't know when they're going to be sentenced, but they are looking at, let's see. Oh, no, actually, they were sentenced to between 3.5 and 6 years. This is already convicted and sentenced, I guess, in the same fell swoop there. Okay, we got a call.
Yeah, it's Nate from Syracuse.
Nate. Hello, Nate.
Hey, John, how are you?
Ah, good to hear your voice, man.
Hey, you too.
How you doing?
Not too bad. I just wanted to add a little bit to that whole Tony thing.
Oh, great.
That originally came through, I think, the North American Animal Liberation Press Office.
Oh.
Jerry Vlasic had an invitation to do the same thing that Tony did.
Mm-hmm.
And he posted the original email that he was sent, and in that email, the guy mentions that he hosted somebody named Charlotte Laws and then Tony Nocella.
Uh-huh.
That's
uh-huh.
Where that whole thing came from, and then it just blew up from there. But I'm really glad that you brought it up.
Yeah,
Tony's name has been a real dirty name in Syracuse for a long time anyway. He's known as a really difficult person to work with, and been kicked out of some of the social groups around here. So
I see. Gee whiz, that's darn distressing. I met the guy in April there, you know, when we were there. And
yeah,
he struck me as a politician, you know, very fast talking and everything, but I didn't have any particular fix on the guy. I wouldn't say I had no basis for anything, but to do something like this and then just say, well, it's no big deal. What's the problem kind of thing, right? I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah. He's a politician through and through. I mean, he was a thorn in my side throughout that whole event anyway.
Oh.
Yeah, I approached him to help out with that, and he did nothing but hurt, so...
Oh, geez. You sure worked hard to put that on. I mean, we're so appreciative of your work. Gosh, and so I didn't really get that. Huh.
No, not a huge deal. I mean, it's more personal between me and him, but I'm really glad you got out that information. It's it's good for people to know.
Yeah.
Stay away from him. He's nothing to concern yourself with and not worth working with.
Thanks for the advice, man. Thanks for the... information. You've been in Syracuse quite a while, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm glad you're doing well, and good show as always, and I'll talk to you soon, man, so keep in touch.
All right, for sure.
All right, take care.
So long, Nate. Nate the Great in Syracuse. That's nice. Well, there's been some, might as well delve into some other political stuff here. I hope this isn't too obscure to anyone. I'm going to kind of go in and out in terms of news and some more focused political stuff, which I bring up because I think they do touch on other things. And as I said, I am really encouraged. There have been some, I don't know if it's just summertime, I don't know why that would account for it, but there's more awareness. It's got, you know, light years to go. I'm not saying that it doesn't, but the anti-civilization perspective is really moving around, and I think I can share this one. This is just a small story, but I heard from Umut in Istanbul, is one of the Yeşil Enerji folks. I can say this because it's a public thing, not it's a big thing, but they have a very nice info shop there. It's a great bunch of anarchists there in Istanbul. I've been there twice fairly recently, and I found out they just moved to a bigger space. And anyway, Yeşil Enerji is green anarchy there in Turkish, in Istanbul. And marvelous people. Anyway, they've been accused of taking over the info shop, the anti-civ, the dreaded anti-civ primitivist green anarchy plague has taken over the info shop, which of course is not true at all, but... It's just kind of strange. I mean, I know it isn't, and I know Umut is telling the truth about that. But it just kind of hits me that maybe if they see green anarchists everywhere, well, maybe they are everywhere, but they're not taking over nothing. That's not the way they are. That's just not. But maybe they're slipping a little. And there's some of the weirdest things, too, at the same time. This is just not surprising, but it's uneven development, you might say, a Marxist term I'm stealing there. But I see that some anarchists have been working on an anarchist FAQ, questions and answers kind of thing, for 10 years. And they have finally put it out. Unfortunately, they have missed everything that's been going on in 10 years. It's just really something. This is on InfoShop. One more thing from InfoShop. And it's these syndicalists, people that are... and they insist, for one thing they're saying here, this is a long preface to this thing, questions and answers kind of thing. It's a little catechism sort of deal, which I think should make anyone suspicious in the first place. But they state, anarchism has always been a socialist, underlined with heavy letters, theory. And it even less so now, but if you want to stick with the old leftist stuff and defend the industrial system and all the rest of it, just keep on pushing the technology, then you have something basic in common with the people running this whole rotten thing and hoping that it keeps on running. And that's just kind of ridiculous. But, and gonna keep this short, but on the anti-politics forum, My friend Aleksa in Serbia, in Belgrade, or Beograd, the real name, about a week ago, wrote a wonderful piece about just kind of taking issue with people who, there was somebody who referred to the primitivist regime, if there's a collapse and the primitivists take over. And so Aleksa said, what are you talking about, regime or taking over? This is cadre think. This is the way you look at reality and see regimes. But if primitivism, in quotes, means anything, it means people handling things themselves, taking responsibility for things outside of things like the state and religion and the industrial structures and the horrible panoply of civilization. That's what it means fundamentally. But and he just, I thought, rather poetically as well as analytically, kind of tore it apart. But and several people followed up on that in a cool way. But then, of course, since anti-politics is basically a Marxist board in terms of its regulars, there was a counterattack. And good old Sasha, this, I'm going to read this because it just kind of cracked me up. He says, well, he talks about this and that, but then he winds up his thing, his response to Aleksa. One of the main critiques of primitivist ideology is that it limits potentiality with a rather fixed idea of the human. This is in part because primitivism, unlike a more general anti-civ critique, is, I guess, is based on more of a positive notion of the human than a critique of civilization per se. To me, anti-civ is about breaking with the totality of our present conditions and opening up to the new potentials in social relations and the human. This would mean instead of saying we are against cities and for a primitive life way, we don't really know what the potential ways of living if we break with the present. Ah, that really is fishy. That is just plain fishy. That the real point there is that you're not against cities, and you're certainly not for a primitive life form. You might as well say it. Why not just say that? If you're talking about a critique of civilization per se, wouldn't that involve some of its basic features, such as cities and a number of other things, which, of course, Sasha Kaye has been manifestly unwilling to do? You know, as I think I might have said this before or something like it, we really don't know what could happen if we break with it, and that's just fine. We don't, we're not necessarily against this or that, you know. Well, would you say that in terms of, you know, racism, sexism, homophobia? Would you just say, well, we can't be against that because who knows what'll happen once we have to just break with the system and then we'll discover this or that? Well, that's just a cop-out. That's just a weaselly way of not being anti-civ. It's just, and someone named Foga, I'll just wind this up with this, this is in a way a response to that. Personally, Foga says, I see, which I think stands for Friends of Green Anarchy, in some general way, I'm not trying to put him in a pigeonhole here, but he or she writes, personally, I see modern cities as the result of a ubiquitous mindset that believes we cannot find the joy and happiness we seek for our lives without a variety of things that city living brings us most easily, in the short term, of course. Hey, it's easier to walk down to the corner store to get your food whenever you want it than to grow it all from seed, assuming one can ignore the larger implications and impacts of having that store. But I also believe that mindset is the result of our massive and all too successful indoctrination as to what it means to, quote, live literally and figuratively, hustle, bustle, work, 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 buy, 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 find a way to get ahead. Interesting how a primitive life is typically seen as mere survival, whereas a civilized life is typically seen as full living. Seems horribly skewed to me, at least given my own life experiences. Well put. That was quite succinct. Oh, we got another call. Hello.
Yeah, Cricket's on the phone.
Hello, Cricket.
Hey, Jay-Z. How's it
going? Hi. Good.
Yeah, I really appreciated you bringing up the Sasha Kaye thing. I just sort of, in front of me, it's right as I was listening to your show, I was reading something that's from inthewake.org, which is a I'm not sure if you've seen this website, but it's subtitled A Collective Manual in Progress for Outliving Civilization.
Oh, wow, I never heard of that.
Yeah, it's a really, really grounded website, a lot of really practical things, and there's a section that's basically called What is Civilization? And they're basically just sort of defining what civilization is, and I've been reading Derek's new book a lot lately, and I think it's interesting that Sasha Kaye could actually talk about civilization without talking about cities, because, I mean, as far as I can tell, a city, you know, like writers like Derek Jensen are basically defining civilization, you know, as cities, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what civilization is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He defines it basically, you know, as a culture, a complex of stories, institutions, and artifacts that both leads to and emerges from the growth of cities, with cities being defined as people living more or less permanently in one place in densities high enough to require the routine importation and other necessities of life, importation of food and other necessities of life. And Derek also notes that basically cities need to perpetually centralize, which means that they basically always require resources brought into the centers of the city, which creates an increasing region of unsustainability surrounded by an increasingly exploited countryside. So, yeah, I just wanted to say that I completely agree with your critique of Sasha. I just wanted to add that I don't really know how you could potentially even talk about an anti-civilization critique without directly critiquing cities and, you know, rejecting them at least conceptually.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that out. That grounds it a lot, I think. And that's not. He didn't just make that up. It's a defining phenomenon or feature to all kinds of mainstream archaeologists and anthropologists. That's just the nature of the thing. That's not some political thing that he cooked up, you know, either. But he brings out some of the fuller implications, I think, as you say.
Yeah, I mean, it's just weird to think about making a break from civilization without making a break from cities. I mean,
I don't know why he sort of still keeps clinging to that. I mean, nobody's forcing him to. I think it strikes the both of us, and not just the both of us, as kind of contradictory.
I mean, what it seems to really boil down to is an attachment to exploiting people. I mean, when you sort of logically follow the argument through, is that cities, the existence of cities requires exploiting people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a very simple point. I guess he missed it.
So, well put, man.
I just wanted to throw that in there.
Thanks.
Enjoy.
Thanks, Cricket. That's great. Well, I think we're going to have a little music break here, a little Chet Baker and Jerry Mulligan.
Yeah, right after a short message.
Okay, great. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily the views of KWBA Radio or the Associated Students of the University of Oregon. Anarchy Radio is an editorial collage providing analysis and opinions of John Zerzan and the community at large. Thank you. Okay, we're back, and we played the mandatory warning, didn't we?
We sure did, the warning.
Warning. It's not called a warning, it's called a, what is it?
It's a disclaimer.
A disclaimer, right.
It's almost as good as a warning.
Yeah, whatever it was, we did it. Or Carl did it. We're on time here. You know, I was reading about cell phones, piece about 10 days ago.
While you were talking on a cell phone?
Well, no.
Because
no.
You can do anything while you're talking on a cell phone.
Isn't that true? And nothing. Jeez. I think the message of cell phones is, I want to be somewhere else. It's dead here. Don't you think? And that, but you're talking to somebody else who also wants to be somewhere else. And it's dead there too. And God, there's all this empty chatter. I mean, you could make a case about, well, I mean, I can make a number of points. Probably one is we'll be forced to all have cell phones. It won't be too much of a choice. But you could say, well, if you're you have an emergency, you might be old or you might be a child somewhere and you might get stuck or whatever, you know.
Yeah, people got old and stuck and all that stuff.
They did?
Before they even had cell phones.
You're right on the button.
And, you know,
girl.
Most of the time they were okay.
They were. I think they were. You know, another thing along those lines that just popped into my head? Kids now have to be slathered with sunscreen to go outside.
Yes.
That didn't used to happen, and I think human beings were around for, what, 3 million years now? And, how come they all didn't die?
It's because they were covered with a thin layer of dirt because they never washed.
Okay, you had to bring that up. Yeah, they were grungy and horrible, and they probably smelled bad.
Hippies don't wear sunscreen.
There you go. Case closed. Well, this whole thing. I ran across this actually just today. I was reading some Heidegger for a little light amusement here. This book, Zolik on Seminars. It says, we are living in a peculiar, strange, and uncanny age. He wrote this in 1965. The more frantically the volume of information increases, the more decisively the misunderstanding and blindness to the phenomena grows. Gee, he figured that out 40 years ago. You know, I think there's a connection to all these things. I'm not so sure about that, but there might be. I mentioned last week, I do believe it was, if not the week before, the American Sociological Review study that came out. It was called the General Social Survey of, among other things, one of the fundamental things it was looking at is confidants or close friends. And it found out that since 1985, when the average number of confidants, and presumably an adult American has, I think that's who they were studying here, three, and now it's down to two. So in 20 years, it's 50% less. And as we have more internet connectivity, kind of an ugly word, but we're all connected. We have so much information. But as Heidegger says, what does it help you with? It's just flooding every available space and just mystifying everything at best. It's really sad. It goes along, and I think I might have mentioned this too, the huge increase in the number of single person households. And in fact, this study, this general social study or survey, also points out the number of people who have no close confidants or close friends. And whereas in 1985, this was about 15%. It looks like somewhere close to that. I'm looking at the graph. Now it's closer, it's over 20%. It looks like 25%. Talk about isolation. But gee, we're being connected more all the time. Well, anyway, in the Sunday New York Times Magazine, you know, you just can count on these things. Just like you can count on these leftist nitwits to come back with their weak response. someone named Ann Hulbert. There's a piece, it's just a two-pager, in Sunday, Confidant Crisis. Americans have fewer close friends than before. Is that a problem? And she says, oh, no, it's not. It's just fine. I mean, now we can get all this web involvement. You know, it's who needs close confidants? It's unbelievable. It's just, they just wallow in this alienation and pronounce that it's just fine. It's just getting better and better as the whole sick culture just gets more cold and meaningless and empty and how fast does it have to move in this direction to not be noticed? Or when it is noticed, then it's just papered over with the propaganda of the system of all the civilizing processes. So it's actually just dandy. It's just healthy, and everybody is just having a great time, even though they're just more shut off from each other and have no way of... they have to chatter on the cell phone all the time, saying nothing, and somehow that replaces having some kind of healthy connection on an intimate basis with somebody. Or now it's down to two. I suppose in 10 years it'll be one, and, well, also in this book, which has sort of transcripts of Heidegger conversations and some of these seminars, part of it is letters to an Indian fellow called Medard Boss, and he has a lot to say. Toward the end of the book, he says, the vast majority of all modern ailments already belong to the illnesses which are called by the unfortunate term psychosomatic. They all finally have their origin in the sick person's comportment to the modern industrial society of our time, with which he could not cope in a way worthy of a human being. And this was also written in 1969 in this case. And this has come true all the more. And thank you, Randy, for sending this my way. I believe this was on the front page of the New York Times on Sunday. Checklist for Camp, Bug Spray, Sunscreen, Pills by Jane Gross. It's a story about summer camps. In this particular one, although it's kind of a survey here, upstate New York, this is filed from Burlingham, New York. She writes, the breakfast buffet at Camp Echo starts at a picnic table covered in gingham patterned oilcloth. Here, children jostle for their morning medication, Zoloft for depression, Abilify, I think that's the way you pronounce it, Abilify for bipolar disorder, Guanfacine for twitchy eyes, and a host of medications for attention deficit disorder. Now, between a quarter and half of the youngsters at any given summer camp take daily prescription meds, experts say. All my best friends take something, said David Ehrenreich, 12. Everybody's just so goofed up, but pharmaceuticals are right there. Cover it up and make life somewhat bearable as the whole rotten thing goes under. Here's something I thought was kind of a little metaphor for the whole thing. Is in the news lately, the big dig in Boston, you probably have noticed this. This is a $15 billion tunnel highway project. And it's the biggest urban development of this kind. It's going to replace some above-ground freeway, evidently, or freeways. There have been just a few problems, including deaths, and now they have found out that the number of flaws has now reached 362 as of Friday after a fatal tunnel collapse. Killed a woman motorist. When a 3-ton concrete ceiling panel crushed her car. There you go. And the people that dream of public transportation or kind of cattle transport, mass is a good reason why they call it mass transportation. Think about that. Well, in Illinois, you just read about this everywhere, especially in the past few days for some reason. There was a big one in Chile. And I'm not talking about the terrorist bombing in Mumbai, which used to be called Bombay, or part of it is still called Bombay, in Western India last week. But Chicago, there was a derailment, as well as in Chile, killing several people. None of this is going according to plan, is it? None of the technological stuff is turning out so good. 2,100 gallons of oil fouled Delaware River. Thousands flee oil disaster. This is last Saturday. Noxious mud oozing from around an oil well has driven about 8,000 from their homes in East Java and left hundreds gasping for breath or vomiting. Latest in a series of environmental traumas linked to the mad frenzy for energy and mining in this resource-rich country. Nature is just resources, after all. We know that. I like this one. I think this was today, front page. No, it was a day or two ago. In Tucson, the levels of voting are getting so low, just as they are everywhere. Now they have this proposal to make your ballot, if you were a voter in Tucson, it's the same as a lottery ticket. You could win $1 million. They have to sucker people into voting by this. This is just, this is pretty darn telling. If the general election in 2004 is a guide when more than 2 million people voted, the 1 in 2 million odds of winning the election lottery would be far better than the Powerball jackpot, which is about 1 in 146 million, but not as great as dying from a lightning strike. Ah, jeez, the whole thing, people don't enjoy being manipulated and messed with under the guise of democracy. Well, let's see. Here's a good one. I keep diving back into the statements by our political friends who shall remain clueless and nameless, I guess. Here's an article from Phoenix, from the Phoenix Insurgent. And it says about workers' power. And but this person, sort of like Sasha being anti-civilization, it's just as convincing, I'm afraid. This article starts out by saying, "There is little doubt in my mind that technology, especially since the rise of industrial capitalism, has been a disaster for humanity. Those of you who know my politics are certainly aware that I'm a firm believer in the notion that technology is not a neutral force, but rather a political tool wielded by the capitalist and bureaucratic class for the domination of the working class." Buddy, I don't know if you noticed, but that's kind of a massive contradiction. It's not a neutral force, and then in the same sentence, it's a political tool wielded by the capitalist class. You just said it is a neutral force. I mean, that's the old saw. That's the oldest one in the book. It's just a neutral thing, and it depends on how you use it. That's the old ideology. You haven't even bothered to put it in different words, and yet you proclaim it to be something else. That doesn't seem to fly to me. Well, I don't have to tell anyone that global warming is getting worse and worse. The fourfold increase in the average number of large wildfires since 1970. And here, on Friday, it was reported that the first half of this year was the warmest ever. They're talking about the U.S. as the heat wave strikes everywhere, raging blazes in 9 states. And if you look in the business pages, it says industrial production rises as heat spurs electricity use. So you see the closed circuit cycle of this thing, as global warming necessitates more, not only more air conditioners, but all the rest of it. You've got to have more industrial production, which, of course, makes for more global warming. And the oceans, another study about how the oceans are becoming more acidic. And this was kind of a new one here. Altered plants. Vines, there's this, you might have seen this one. This is from the Washington Post. It was reprinted in the Guard on Sunday. That there are all kinds of vines all around. From backyard gardens to the Amazon rainforest, vines are growing faster, stronger, and in the case of poison ivy, more poisonous in the heavy doses of carbon dioxide that comes from global warming. Vine infestation complaints have increased tenfold in a decade. Woods they used to know have just changed character. They're covered with vines. The trees are being weakened and falling over or strangled. Tuna faces extinction in the Mediterranean. And another study about more birds facing extinction. But the real answer is to go and watch the Al Gore movie, as I've explained before. The whole massive breakdown of the environment, all ecosystems. The answer, though, as our former vice president points out, our ruling class politician, is energy-efficient appliances. Yes, wow, that's just so ludicrous, so absolutely astonishingly preposterous, and yet all these liberals just lapping it up. Oh yeah, it's the most catastrophic thing in human history, but if we buy some emergent energy-efficient appliances, it'll be just dandy. Okay. Calm down. But, and the energy... The energy thing goes on. There's a study about it's not a study, it's just an article here about the another gigantic dam project, this one in Laos, in what used to be one of the most remote places in all of Southeast Asia, is a huge, huge thing, not on the size or scale of the Three Gorges Dam, which just began operations in China, but hey, how are you going to have more growth? If you don't have these dams, you got to have industrial development, needless to say. Well, what you got to have is more technology. Robert Samuelson points out the only salvation is new technology, because that's the only way it can happen. And here I was reading an interesting piece in New Scientist about tools in Eastern Africa. Olduvan tools uncovered in Gona, Ethiopia, have been dated at between 2.6 and 2.5 million years old. Recent systematic excavations at Gona show the makers had a sophisticated understanding of fracture dynamics, selecting raw materials with good flaking properties, etc. So that's been pushed back a little bit, and along with the implications about... What capacities Homo had in those days, and they didn't find it necessary to leap to complex, powerful techno systems or the techno culture for some reason there. But the solution actually is more technology, and there was a great story here in the science section, the weekly every Tuesday, I think, in the New York Times, piece called How to Cool a Planet, Maybe. And so now they're going for geoengineering, they're studying now, for example, putting a large mirror that would shield the Earth from the sun. Yeah, just wacky science fiction things. But or another one, and this has the backing of Edward Teller, a main inventor of the H-bomb, gives you a little hint there, spraying chemicals into low clouds to increase their reflectivity. Of course, lacing the stratosphere with tons of sulfur dioxide might not be the best idea. Plus, it's a little complicated because it would require hundreds of jumbo jets, and that would, of course, create acid rain and other forms of pollution. So... yeah, more technology, that's the way to go. It's just remarkable. But some good signs, there are some good signs. We've seen, and again, go, if you haven't seen this this piece about Kevin Tucker, not that it's about an individual, it's not, but it's just a good case study, if you will, It's at infoshop.org, or you could probably just, yeah, you could go there, or it's the Pittsburgh City Paper last week, a long and quite excellent piece. Well, I guess we're kind of running down here on time, huh? Okay, we're going to go out with some Dizzy Gillespie, one of his kind of trademark tunes. See you next week.